Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Todd, do you know what you do if you're attacked by a gang of circus performers?
Ooh, what do you do if you get attacked by a group of circus performers?
You go for the jugular. Juggler.
I guess it's like super apt that that didn't work because as our theme song was playing, my whole computer crashed. And so awesome. Everything I had lined up, but I think I might, we'll screw it. Never mind. No, that's not. It was supposed to be. Oh, here we go.
You stole my entire fucking.
Nope, that's not
no,
it either.
No.
Anyway, it was supposed to be Burt Reynolds laughing from the movie Breaking. We just did an episode of Portland at the Movies about 1989 Burt Reynolds movie Breaking In that was filmed in Portland. Wait for that episode later this week. But for now, you are here at the Mark and Todd cast. I am one of your hosts, Todd Workhoven. And I am joined by Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well.
Good.
Considering Facebook and see if our video is actually playing and check in with people. There they are. There's four people watching.
Perfect. And considering that this show is off to a rocky start where you can't tell a joke and I can't play
Barbara
anything
Reynolds
on this computer.
And my mom. Lewis.
Sweet. Well, ooh, I did. But speaking of things I can play from my computer.
Hey, Barbara.
It has been a while since I've added any sounders to the rotation, and so I finally hunted down two that I know I've been wanting for a while. So my first one is
wrong
which is hard. I forgot that Hillary, he was like talking over Hillary Clinton,
right?
And so to take her out,
find an isolated
wrong. Yeah,
wrong.
But I also found
you are fake news.
Yes.
So I'll be playing
you are fake news
every now and then. So I need to keep up on my sounder list because they delight me. So, but
my mom sends her greetings. Hello.
Well, hello, Mark's mom.
We got Vince.
I need to shut it.
Mike Benton. See, Mike is listening, and so I haven't talked to Mike in 15 years probably, but Mike.
Which Mike?
I think he's already gone. Oh. He's already gone. Damn it. it's not going to work at all. I was going to.
Wow. We are batting zero on just about everything that we're doing.
Mike
today.
Would always say this phrase. So we worked on the same submarine. We worked in the engine room of the submarine.
Is this Mike?
No.
Okay.
No, Mike Benton.
Okay.
And Mike was great guy, but in the engine room, it was really hot and really humid and everything. And so he'd sweat like we all did.
Yeah.
And he always said the phrase, I'm sweating like a gay man eating a hot dog. And I knew it was funny,
right.
But I didn't know
why.
Like if it was a negative or like
I see
like
I see,
what
I see.
Direction that
right.
was it
right.
was coming from,
right.
And I thought maybe he might clarify.
He would clarify that after all these years, he could finally
like
put
a gay man eating on
put a button on that.
Is he like hiding the fact that he's? Okay, I don't
is
know.
He nervous about
right.
it? Right, excited,
like super excited. Okay,
all right. Well,
good things coming up. So. I was just going to jump in with a couple things coming
sure.
up in Portland. My favorite musician of all time is a lady named Betty Who, and I would call her my diva. She's
how have I never heard of this person before today?
She's a big part of my life
since like last week or
like,
okay
about two years. So
okay,
she's very. Like candy pop, you know, in the vein of Katy Perry kind of music, and she's 6'1", blonde.
I'm listening again and still
and Australian, and she's awesome. She's
I would figure
she's great
I was
in every way
Asian descent with How do you spell her last name?
W-H-O, like.
Okay, Kelly.
Who?
So not H-U like
no.
I was.
No, no, no. Betty Who.
Oh, hey now.
Hey now. Yeah, hey now. So she's beautiful, tall, and she's
like
a great,
she's like your
great
Storm
voice.
Large.
She is exactly my Storm Large. Okay. So I know that she's been working on a new album. And so I was sitting down doing some work and I'm like, hey, I should look up and see if her new album's hit yet. And it just had been announced. There's been a single released on it, but the new album isn't out. But she's announced a new set of tour dates, right? And so I'm like, oh my gosh. So I look and she's coming to Seattle. And then I look down further, it's, she's coming to Portland. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I click on the get tickets and there's $16 general admission tickets.
Right.
And then there's like this VIP package. The VIP package is all of the general admission, plus you get a copy of the album, plus you get a meet and greet. I'm like, oh my God, that'd be amazing to meet Betty Who.
Yes, and yes, then, and yes.
And then I look down further and there's like the ultimate VIP package and the ultimate VIP package. It includes the meet and greet, it includes the special album, it includes time with her in the green room. And
eating her discarded food.
Eating her discarded food. And she
touching the hem of her garment.
She makes a voicemail message, an outgoing voicemail message on my phone. And so I'd rather redirect her energy to make a little stinger for the Mark and Todd cast.
There
so
we go.
We'll
okay.
see what we can do. But
and you can just record it onto your phone
right.
instead of just being
right. Hi, Ben. This is Betty Who. This is welcome to the Mark and Todd cast.
That would be great. Because so what was your joke that you're going to?
So Nick is like, well, and I told Nick, you know, like, you have to go with me because I'm so nervous, and yeah, my mom says she's never heard of her. Nobody's ever heard of her.
And, the big Mark's favorite thing that nobody ever has ever heard of before.
John Azell says who uh-huh. exactly. So yeah. Nick is like, well, if you don't want to be nervous, maybe you should make a joke and tell her a joke so that you can break the ice. And so like immediately just within 1 second of him saying that, I said, knock, knock. And he's like, who's there? I'm like, exactly. That would be my old joke.
And you know she's
and
heard
I've
that.
I've never
about
heard that before.
100,000 okay. times.
So,
but before we get into some news here, I wanted to mention that this past week,
Doc Azell says he was the doc on my old submarine.
Okay,
what the hell, Mark? You never asked me to do a stinger for your podcast. So.
We'll be contacting all of our old friends to give stingers to the Market Talkcast.
It's a strange memory of Doc Azell. Like he remarked on how large my quadriceps are were from one time. He was doing
are
first
they?
Aid training with us, and it's this weird moment. He's like, you know, if his. It was a really weird moment, but I remember, and I'm sure he doesn't remember, but it was a strange time aboard the USS Archie back in the submarine.
Interesting time to be in the Navy. But before I started to move on, I wanted to mention that this past Monday, actually it'll be coming out. It came out this past Thursday. I was a guest on the Not Nerd podcast.
Yes.
With their friends Nate and Dave. So if you wanted to go to notnerd.com or subscribe to it on iTunes. It's kind of a show that's kind of similar to ours. They do news and then, but they're about tech and technology and getting people to use technology in a smarter way.
Nice.
And they're kind of like us, how they're not for the people who are ultimate tech nerds already, but people who are just interested
learning
and wanting
about
to hear new things.
Sweet.
And so I brought a page full of the questions that I just had about technology and went over there and we talked about different things like modems and cell phone plans and the cloud and a bunch of stuff like that. So do check them out. They're at notnerd.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/notnerd. And you'll note it when we talked to the Unipiper earlier, we already recorded that segment, but we talked about Nate, who was one of the hosts, his glorious mustache. That did you ever find out the name of the type of mustache he has? Did you try to,
so
I don't know
Nate,
how you would look it
so
up.
So Nate Heath just said, thanks for the plug. And he's online. So Nate, how would you, there's I'm sure there are technical aspects of a of a mustache and
the
mustache, and facial hair.
The mustachio gentleman. Yeah, because we talked a little bit about an upcoming mustache and beard competition here in Portland. And I was trying to explain Nate's mustache to people who have not seen it before. So
right. And so are there descriptive words that are the technical description for the parts of your mustache, Nate?
We'll leave him asking into the ether.
Into the ether. He was watching. I don't know if he.
Anyway, we'll move on to some news stories here. Did you want to talk? Why don't you talk about the Grimm?
Grimm. Okay, so as everybody in the planet was told by different newscasts and different, like everybody's Facebook group and everybody was told about Grimm, the TV show, has wrapped. And they have a warehouse full of stuff for sale. And the pictures are amazing. Well, it turns out that that warehouse is just one warehouse of multiple blocks of product that is being sold over the next 9 days. And so they're bringing out each night, they're replenishing the warehouse that the parts of the warehouse that got emptied out the previous day.
Wow.
And so there's a ridiculous amount of stuff. So the doors open at 9 a.m. and we went yesterday morning in the rain. We got there about 8 o'clock. There were maybe 750, maybe 1,000 people ahead of us.
Jeez.
They let in 250 people, and that's the capacity of the warehouse. After 250 people, they only let one in for every one person that comes out. So at 10:15, an hour and 15 minutes into it, 10 people had come out.
Wow.
And so there were, by this time, 1,500, 2,000 people in line. By the time, so we stayed there a total of 3 hours. And I sent Nick up to the head of the line to like, he talked to Kyle Eboshi over at KGW News, and he was talking to people as they're coming out and seeing like what pricing was going on and all this stuff. And we estimated based on the rate of people exiting, we would be there for another 5 hours.
Wow.
Waiting. And so we left, and I'm sending Nick to go tomorrow morning on a weekday. And see what happens and see what's.
Wow. There. That's crazy.
Nate says, and my mom's birthday is coming up. That definitely. Okay. So Nate says it's complicated. I believe it would fall into freestyle styled in world competition, that or an imperial partial beard. And
so it comes out over his lip and then kind of meets down at, the sides of his chin. It's not filled in the chin like a Van Dyke, but it goes to the to the outside of the chin, and then it goes straight out maybe 5 or 6 inches
up,
and then curls up on each side. So it's kind of, yeah, so it's quite something. I'll post a picture of
it's
magnificent. on our show page. So
yeah,
so
and Tyler says, I like how Mark thinks that we're all cool enough to have heard about the Grimm warehouse sale.
Well, if you were cool enough to listen to last week's show,
last week's episode,
then you would have been on the tip.
But I've seen it listed on everybody's Facebook feed and Craigslist. There was like photography groups that were coming in from Seattle. There were people that brought flatbed trucks and trailers and everything. And just a ridiculous, ridiculous, ridiculous quantity of everything that you would have in any house or any, like all the signage for the MAX train and different street signs and different, like everything was a prop. And
wow.
I saw a picture of a box of binoculars. It just like
they were just
150 binoculars and just like different
right
amounts of wear on them.
How weird.
Nate just posted a list of categories of
World
Beard Championship.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we'll put that link on there.
Fantastic.
Yep.
All right. Well, moving on to some new storing data in a single atom proved possible by IBM researchers. Last week we talked about storing information on DNA, but now we're kind of moving to the next step. Imbuing individual atoms with a zero or one is the next major step forward and the next major barrier in storing data digitally. But we've made some steps forward. It works like this. A single holmium atom, a large one with many unpaired electrons, is set on a bed of magnesium oxide. In this configuration, the atom has what's called magnetic bistability. It has two stable magnet states with different spins. And this article says, just go with it. The researchers use a scanning tunneling microscope invented at IBM in the 1980s to apply about 150 millivolts at 10 microamps to the atom. This huge influx of electron causes the holmium atom to switch its magnetic spin state. Because the two states have different conductivity profiles, the STM tip can detect which state the atom is in by applying a lower voltage. So basically, you can. This proves that the experiment truly creates a lasting stored magnetic state in a single atom that could be detected indirectly. So we plan to explore atoms of other elements, clusters of atoms, and small molecules as candidates in the future, says the person behind this. So that I still don't understand how you work with something that small. Like, what is the machinery like?
Right.
I just don't understand.
Yeah. I don't know. I've seen documentaries on like atomic microscopes or the electron microscopes, and the level of fidelity is so ridiculous. They have to isolate everything from the building and the ground that's around it. They basically drill down 1,000 feet into bedrock, and everything is like gripped to the core of the earth, basically, so that it doesn't shake with every passing train a mile from here,
right?
Or any hiccup in
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, and that alone astounds me. How much the precision of the equipment that we're talking about is so ridiculous. And in that whole genre, the equipment that was detecting the gravitational waves, there was a lady who had a yoga ball that they were using as a chair inside the office that was triggering detection within the sensors and had to be isolated from that.
Wow.
Something
that didn't even have corners.
Right. It's crazy.
All right. Waze and other traffic dodging apps prompt cities to game the algorithms. Smartphone apps like Waze are causing headaches for city planners. Using crosswalks, wider sidewalks, and traffic lights, these transportation engineers aim to make neighborhood traffic slow, safe, and friendly, not send frustrated commuters barreling down the side roads. Quote, Waze and Uber hit transportation planners so fast that we didn't know what to do, says Sam Schwartz, a former traffic coordinator for New York City. We can't force an app maker to embed communal goals into their app, he said, but there is some communication between the cities and those major apps. Boston was able to work with Waze to reduce congestion by 18% month over month, according to the data. And the conflict between getting you there fast versus the neighbors who are upset about drive-through traffic, Waze's business is to side with the drivers because that's where the value is. Else they'll go to Apple Maps or TomTom or something else. In 1953, your Chevy made a lot of noise and it gave you physical cues to tell you were driving fast. But since the cars are quiet now, people are speeding through the side roads and using everything else as shortcuts. So city planners are trying to figure out how to all work with Waze. And lots of times they're just like shutting down or rerouting traffic to being one ways or saying no through traffic or things like that. But Waze doesn't really know all those things either.
Right.
So
Waze will sometimes send me into really weird areas because, it's just doing algorithms and saying, if you do this, it will be faster for you.
Right.
And I've taken like a little dirt road behind a house once. And,
wow.
And you're like, really, Waze?
Yeah.
Is this really the best route to take? And it did get me there fast. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But
Crackhead Alley.
It was kind of sketchy getting there.
All right. Is gluten is going goot? Hello. Hello.
Gluten
is
going, free?
Going gluten free, giving you diabetes. There's a new study that links diet with the disease. A major study by Harvard University suggests that ingesting only small amounts of gluten or avoiding it altogether increases the danger of diabetes by as much as 13%. People without celiac disease may reconsider limiting their gluten intake, especially for diabetes. About 1% of people are gluten intolerant, but 12% of our foods now are gluten, or 12% of the population is doing a gluten-free diet. It has been pointed out that there's no evidence that going gluten-free has any health benefits. Quote, we wanted to determine if gluten consumption will affect healthy people with no apparent medicinal reasons to avoid gluten. They examined 30 years of medical data of about 200,000 patients, and they found that most participants had a gluten intake of below 12 grams a day, or that most people had about 12 grams a day, which is like about two or three slices of bread. Those eating more had a 13% lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Gluten-free foods have less dietary fiber and other micronutrients, such as vitamins and minerals, making them less nutritional. So people without celiac disease may reconsider limiting their gluten intake.
I get so frustrated at the gluten-free people. And I've also come to a place of being very zen about it, is they can do whatever the hell they want.
You've gone through your five stages of grief.
I've gone through the five stages
of
grief.
Disease.
And I think, you know, I know two people in the office very specifically who are like go through, well, I'm going without gluten because, you know, gluten it really makes me feel bad.
Sure.
Right? And so I'm going without gluten for, they'll like do a gluten fast, basically. Gluten fast. And so they'll be like, well, you know, I've been off gluten for the last 30 days and I feel really good about it. And
I'm not as bloated.
I'm
not near
oh
as bloated
gosh.
Without the gluten. You,
know,
you guys
the,
really got to try gums
up. It
the gluten.
Just creates a ball
tension,
of
headaches,
gluten
it's
in
just
my,
all
in my
gluten.
Belly. And I feel like the what's really going on is by declaring yourself as gluten free, you actually start paying attention to what you're putting in your body.
Right.
And you are consume whenever you measure and calculate and know and pay attention and are aware of what is actively going in your body instead of just shoving food in your mouth.
Yeah.
Whenever you do that, you eat less and you will eat better things.
Yeah.
And so I don't bemoan the people that are gluten-free. I wish they would acknowledge that gluten is not what is making them feel better.
Right.
The lack of gluten is not making them feel better. They're eating better roundedly and portion size
and purposefully.
And purposefully and intentionally.
Yeah, intentionally. That's the word I was looking for.
And that's my core. I don't have any data to support that, but that's my belief.
Well, sure.
Because they're not the 1% that's gluten intolerant.
Right.
You would
like I think is my second cousin. My second cousin, Mark, had celiac disease.
Right.
And I heard about it in the mid 90s when he almost died from eating gluten.
Exactly.
Not because
exactly.
It made him feel bloated.
Right.
But because he was rushed to the hospital because he was in the same room as gluten at some point and it tried to kill him.
Precisely. And I remember because you and I worked at an agency that did work with Bob's Red Mill.
Yeah.
And Bob's Red Mill was just coming out with their gluten free line.
Okay.
In 2000 or 2001. And so I learned about what that meant at the time and the ludicrousness of the time. But it was all targeted very specifically at celiac disease. It wasn't a
general
diet.
Health. Yeah.
It wasn't the gluten-free diet,
right?
Which is now a thing.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Well, speaking of gluten, Voodoo Donuts has arrived in Los Angeles.
Of course.
Voodoo Donuts has officially arrived in LA, the donut, coffee, and ice cream shop. Do they have ice cream?
I've
I guess.
I've never had ice cream there, but.
Well, I guess. Might be this specific one just sure. does, but it opens up on Universal City Walk on March 9. All the regulars will be there, the Jelly-Filled Voodoo, the signature Bacon Maple Bar, and the one with Fruit Loops, as well as an LA-specific creation, the Hollywood Cream, filled with Bavarian cream and topped with maple frosting. It also will carry Stumptown Coffee.
They discontinued my favorite donut recently. So they
which one was it?
So I bring donuts to the office every payday, and it was the only time I can afford it.
It's penance for your dad jokes.
And right. And they had a new one that was filled with marshmallow fluff on the inside.
Ooh.
Chocolate on the outside, and then dipped in Golden Graham cereal. And so it was Golden Graham's chocolate and marshmallow, which is very s'mores-ish.
In the style of the s'mores.
And that was my favorite thing that they've ever made.
And that sounds pretty good.
That was for the month of February, no apparently.
Well, expect the formal opening sometime in April. You can find them across the from the Hard Rock Cafe near the Jurassic Park parking structure.
I know exactly where that is.
Do you?
I do. I was a member for 2 years down
there. Nice.
Card carrying.
All right, a colossus statue probably depicting Ramses II has been found in Egypt by archaeologists from Egypt and Germany. They found a massive 8-meter statue submerged in the groundwater in a Cairo slum that they say probably depicts revered pharaoh Ramses II, who ruled Egypt more than 3,000 years ago. The discovery, hailed by the Antiquities Ministry as one of the most important ever, was made near the ruins of Ramses II's temple in the ancient city of Heliopolis, located in modern-day Cairo. Blah, blah, blah. He ruled from 1279 to 1213 B.C., We found that a bust of the statue in the lower part of the head, and now we removed the head and found a crown and the right ear and a fragment of the right eye, they said. Local officials and members and archaeologists said that the news media looked on as a massive forklift pulled the statue's head out of the water. So you can see some pictures, and it is a giant head of something. You can see the ear.
Wow.
So. Moving on, just a little bit north of that to Paris. The Mona Lisa's smile has finally been decoded, and science says that she's happy. The subject of centuries of scrutiny and debate, the Mona Lisa's famous smile is routinely described as ambiguous. But in an unusual trial, about close to 100% of the people described her expression as unequivocally happy. We were astonished, said easily astonished neuroscientist Jürgen Kornmeier of the University of Freiburg in Germany. He said... That tickled you, didn't it?
It did. Oh, my word.
So they studied it at a various... where did I go? I lost my place. A study of factors that influence how humans judge visual cues, such as facial expressions. So the portrait appears to be smiling sweetly at first, only to adopt a mocking sneer or sad stare the longer that you look. Using a black and white copy of the picture, a team manipulated the model's mouth's corner slightly up and down to create 8 altered images, 4 progressively happier and look at that super one, Superman one in the middle. So given these descriptions from art and history, we thought that the original would be the most ambiguous. Instead, we found that Da Vinci's original was perceived as happy in 97% of the cases. So the rest of the article goes on about to say about how our brains quickly scan and measure things and to see what they're happy. And then it talks about people with psychiatric disorders unable to be able to tell visually if someone's happy or sad. As for the masterpiece itself, the team believes their work has finally settled a centuries-old question, that there is no ambiguity as to what her smile is saying. All right.
She looks happy to me.
She looks happy to me. An octopus slips out of an aquarium tank, crawls across the floor, and escapes down a pipe to the ocean.
Again,
Inky the octopus didn't even try to cover his tracks. By the time the staff at New Zealand's National Aquarium noticed that he was missing, telltale suction cup prints were the main clue to an easily solved mystery. Inky slipped through the gap left by a maintenance worker at the top of his enclosure and made his way across the floor to a 6-inch wide drain where he squeezed his football-sized body in and made a break. He had been living at the aquarium since 2014. This isn't the first time a captive octopus decided to make take matters into its own hands. So it has a couple different stories of escaping octopuses that I think we've all covered on this show before.
Didn't we cover this?
No, it's this one.
It's a new one?
Yes, it's a new one. I promise.
Okay.
So I think the last one took apart its cage. There's another one that would crawl across the floor and eat mollusks out of the other tank and crawl back. But this one crawled away and out through the ocean. So the aquarium has no plans to replace Inky, but it does intend to better secure the tank.
Are you reading the Washington Post article from...
I don't know.
April of 2016.
I don't know. Is it the same article?
Yes.
Ding dab it. Did we read this already?
Yeah. I'm positive.
This just in. It's just Ink in. The Octopus.
A year ago. But it is an amazing story.
The story is so nice, you had to hear it twice. Well, we have not heard this one before, Mark, because okay. A female shark in a Seoul aquarium eats the male shark because he kept bumping into her. It took the 8-year-old female 21 hours to eat the 5-year-old male inside a tank at the aquarium. According to a video of the consumption, the female shark started with the male's head and slowly went about consuming the rest of his body. This act of shark cannibalism likely was the result of the sharks bumping into one another. Quote, sharks have their own territory, said the aquarium officials told Reuters. Sometimes when they bump into each other, they bite out of astonishment. Despite her best efforts to make a meal out of the shark, the female shark is expected at some point to regurgitate the remains of her former roommate. So you haven't heard that story before, have you?
No, that's a new one. Regurgitate that and an octopus.
Regurgitate the story and read it again in a year.
Boom. Sorry. Sorry.
No.
Don't eat me. Wow.
Had one more. This is a website-based one. But if you go to, and I'll post this link because it's a little longer, but it's at something called pudding.cool. Oh, there we go. How did you get that? I put it in the show notes. So this, I was playing around. So this is a website called How Music Taste Evolved. And it's every top five song from 1958 to 2016. And so click on that one. Play 1997. And so what it will do, I guess I'll click mine. That's me. So it will go, and I want to change it to 1992 because I was listening to that earlier. And it was just wonderful. So it goes through what the number one songs are at the top and the other ones that are moving up and down. And it shows how long each one was number one, what other ones were doing at the same time.
Wow.
And so there's a couple huge ones in 1992, which is why I flagged it again. But that's when Whitney Houston had a couple big ones. Mariah had a couple big ones. But it was an Mbop was released in that year. And this one. A little crisscross. So, I'll post the link to that because it's kind of fun. And you can do every year, like I said, back to... from 1950 something to 2016, so that's
Elton
pretty
John,
cool.
Candle in the Wind in 97, was that when?
When Princess Diana died.
Yeah, okay.
Too soon. You gave me too soon face.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to the Unipiper. And when we come back, we will chat a little bit about eclipses. I have no intro, I guess, because I don't need an intro because the Unipiper is sitting right across from me right now. Hello, Mr. Brian Kidd, the Unipiper. How are you today?
Hey, Todd. Doing good. Thanks for having me in the studio.
Yes, of course. Actually, I you said something very zen a couple minutes ago that I wrote down, and you said, quote, "The Unipiper isn't something you can just friend. You just get to like him," which I thought was pretty amazing.
It has meaning on different levels.
It does. It totally does. So you are in studio today because we just recorded an episode of Portland at the Movies, which will be out later this week.
Breaking in.
Maybe it does help to do it in the Fatal Revenge.
Spoilers.
Starring Burt Reynolds.
Spoilers. We don't recommend it.
No, we don't. We do not recommend it one
thumbs
bit.
Down.
It is not good. But so what else is we got that out of the way for Portland movies. What else is going on in Portland?
Well, yesterday I spent the day. I traveled down to Salem with my good friend Mosho the Cat Rapper.
That's right.
And we traveled to the Oregon Cat Video Festival. And it was a one-day celebration of all things cat video. And there were people.
So and we were chatting about this a little bit earlier. We just got finished eating dinner before we did this, and I was asking some questions, but wasn't totally clear. So it was a convention of fans of cat videos, or people who were in the quote cat video industry. Like
no,
who?
This was not an industry event. This was by and for the fans.
This was not Big Cat.
No, not Big Cat.
Okay.
There were some humane societies, you know, promoting the cat
adoption.
Or, yeah, cat adoption and shelters and things like that. Uh-huh. But then there was also people who would submit their videos to this festival, and they just had a screen going, and for hours you could just sit and watch videos of cats playing, trying to work on doorknobs, and cats sticking their hands trying to paw at fish. And
so what else was there? Like, were there booths there or tables or performers? Like, what else is there?
There were there was a circus troupe there, and they all dressed up like cats, and they did a stage show.
Not affiliated with Cats the Musical.
there was a cat DJ, DJ Kitty Boom.
Oh no.
He was different than the guy at the Comic-Con that had the Daft Punk cat head.
He was not there that I saw. Okay. But there were some furries there.
Okay.
And it culminated. Mosho was the headliner.
Oh wow!
Performing
nice.
For the crowd that was gathered, and it was a fun event. There were lots of interesting people.
Yeah. So were there like little craft booths and stuff like that? Like, oh, yeah, just trying to picture the space.
Yeah. It was a rather large space, and there were some small crafty
crafters.
Things. Yeah. There was some cat bath bombs that I saw, cat jewelry.
Okay.
Of course, cat ears. Oh, and there were lots of small children, and then giant, you know, the yoga balls.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a number of those that they wrapped in yarn, and then the kids would push them around.
Okay, that's adorable.
Yeah. Dressed as cats, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's really, really interesting.
Yeah. And I think it was such a success that the producer said that they're going to try and do another one in Seattle soon.
Interesting.
Wow.
Did he say that while weeping?
Oh, I saw a marketing trick that people are using now, that they flyers that are being mailed out, they saturate with catnip, or they infuse with catnip, so that your cat drags out this one item and plays with it on the, you know, like chews it and stuff, like draws attention to
right.
it. And they're not about cats. It's like your mortgage broker.
right. That's a pretty.
That can't be worth the
amazing
extra cost.
Idea. I'd like to see the research.
Yeah, with the yeah.
that had gone into that. The little rooms they set up with the different cats. So what else is happening?
This week on Wednesday, something I'm looking forward to, I'm going to be seeing John Cleese in town.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Sarah got me tickets to see him.
Is that at Keller or where is that at?
I think it's at the Keller. Okay. It's either the Keller or the Schnitz.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But if I get the energy, I'm going to maybe do a little Monty Python unipiping.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that'd be amazing if he came out.
Oh, that would be cool.
Not holding my breath, though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that'd be cool, though. That's perfect, though. You already have the costume ready.
Yeah. Let's see. Mark your calendars. There is a date that I did not write down, but pulling. Here it is.
Mark it anyway.
You were just speaking out loud to yourself.
I just found it. June 10th. It's the return of the Rose City Beard and Mustache Competition.
Oh, yes.
This is the third annual. I think last year it was like the international, the really big one. But this sounds like it's just the Portland. So if you think you have the best beard in Portland or mustache, it's your chance to get in on that and prove your worth. That's happening June 10th at Dante's.
So friend of the show, and I'll talk about I don't know if I've already talked about it in the show or I will be talking about it after this segment goes, but Nate Heath of the Not Nerd podcast that I was on a guest this week, I sent him that thing because he has got a phenomenal mustache. I'm showing him a picture.
I hope
his
he's
new
there.
Profile picture. So yeah, he was upset because I remember we talked about it last year on the show, but it was like the day after or I had posted a picture because I had friends or something like that, and he was upset because he had missed it last year. So I made sure to.
So we're looking at the picture of him, and
isn't that amazing?
In olden times when I was a kid, there were curb feelers on large cars.
Yes.
And they were just a long spring that would go out from the front and back of a car so that you knew that you were, you know,
close to the
he looks like he has curb feelers.
Yeah, so he has this great mustache where it comes down a little bit, not over the chin, but right. What would you call
How
this
would you
part?
Describe that?
I am trying to describe that. There's probably a proper name for that mustache.
Guaranteed there are.
But then it's the real long one that sticks out. Oh, I'd say maybe four or 5 inches on the sides.
It's got to be a foot long side to side.
Yeah, it's pretty long. I'm sure he'll let us know. Well, he's not listening to this right now. But anyway, yeah, so the beard mustache competition. Nice.
The Hollywood Theater just announced their next 70mm film showings.
I heard about this at work this last week. I'm
pretty
super excited.
These are always a really big deal. So they're going to be showing 3 films in April. Tickets are currently on sale for Hollywood Theater members. They go on sale for the general public, I believe, on Tuesday. And they're going to be showing in April Ghostbusters, Interstellar, and Tron.
Oh wow!
All on the same day, and so you can do a triple feature.
Oh, that's cool!
It starts at like 6 o'clock in the afternoon and goes until midnight.
Very cool. Yeah.
And I didn't even realize that Ghostbusters was filmed in 70mm.
I didn't either.
I did a little bit of research into it, and there's a large number of films that weren't completely filmed in 70mm, but portions of the movie were filmed in 70mm.
Okay.
And Ghostbusters falls into that category.
Huh.
But Tron, on the other hand, Tron was filmed entirely in 70mm.
Wow.
So
that'll be cool.
That will be cool. One thing I would love to hear more about, there is a new organization in Portland called the Portland Anarchist Road Care Group. This is a group that is going around sort of a guerrilla style and just popping up and filling potholes.
God, love them.
Their own brand of street justice. They have a Facebook page. They're at Portland Anarchist Road Care, and there's photos. They're wearing masks and pouring asphalt.
It's pretty great. I saw that come across Facebook, and it was funny because I live out in the country, and one of the roads to our house, I think, is just like old county road, just huge potholes. And I was going to get out and just spray paint circles around them, not like to have anyone to fix it, just so I could avoid them, you know, as you're driving down the road. And then somebody mysteriously, like those. Some of the bigger ones were filled in. Wait, and there's no way it's this anarchist group but it was funny. It popped up the day after. I was like, what a perfect way to like for helpful anarchy. Like
yeah.
That doesn't often happen where your anarchists are like a force for good change. So I thought that was pretty great.
Just waiting for them to get caught and then sent to jail and the public backlash against that.
Oh, I mean, that would be amazing.
Would be. That's probably what they want.
Totally.
The Unipiper needs to team up with them next snowstorm we get.
Oh, yes.
Gosh, that's right. And because I noticed on their page too, they put little black bars over their face. Yeah. So you can put a little black bar, like too tiny on Vader's helmet.
That would be good.
Block your identity. Oh, that would be amazing.
Wow. Want to bring mention to a group that I just found out about called the Portland Geek Council. Maybe you've heard of this.
Yes,
I have not.
Of course.
This...
I believe, and I don't want to overspeak, but I believe my friend Aaron Duran is involved with that.
Geek
but
in
I
the
at
city?
Least know. Yes, Aaron. Nice. Well, I've trained you well. But yeah, so I want to say he's president, but I don't think he's. I know he's president of PDXR right now.
Oh yeah, so I'm looking at their list of member organizations, and PDXR is on there.
Oh okay,
so he's involved
somehow.
So it says from their website, the Portland Geek Council was formed in late 2010 by a group of like-minded geeks to forward geek culture in the greater Portland metro area, striving to unite and cultivate the Portland geek community, those people who are enthusiastic and perhaps a little obsessive in their pursuit of their passions.
Yep.
We provide opportunities and resources to facilitate networking, community building, and targeted marketing, especially for our member organizations, but also for Portland's geek community at large. So it looks like they provide a lot of services for people who are passionate about things that are worth being passionate about.
Yeah, and I'm looking at their Facebook page, and like the amount of friends I have that have liked this is very, very high.
Yeah. So yeah.
Cool, yeah.
I want to try and get the Unipiper involved with
totally,
that.
Totally.
Let's see. And lastly, I'm going to Amsterdam. I think I mentioned it last week, but I will be going to Amsterdam on Thursday. If we have any Unipiper fans over in the Netherlands, let me know. I'm coming your way. I'd love to know what to see and do while I'm there for all of maybe 48 hours. the Unipiper in Amsterdam this weekend, and I'll give you guys a full report when I get back.
That's so great. Yeah, like I said, don't forget to get the stroopwafel in the airport.
Absolutely.
You won't be disappointed. Awesome. Well, it was good to have you in studio today. If people wanted to find other things about you, where can they go?
As always, go click over to my webpage, unipiper.com, and just drop me a note. Let me know if you have events coming up that you'd like to hear talk about on the show. Anything generally weird going on, let me know and I'll give it a shout.
Perfect. And I hear you have some attractive new items in your Unipiper shop.
That's right. This week we're featuring the Unipiper shower curtain. It's not funny, Todd. I'm not joking.
Well played. All right. Thanks for coming in, Brian.
All right. I know what you're getting for your next birthday.
That's amazing. All right.
Cool. So today I thought we would talk about eclipses. We in Oregon will experience a full total solar eclipse at the end of this summer. It's August 21st. Earlier I said it was August 27th and I was wrong. So okay. August 21st, which is a Monday. And it's going to happen kind of late morning for us. And if you are in the Portland metro area, you're going to need to go south to see a total solar eclipse. And so it's kind of going from like Newport through Salem, through Madras, through John Day, as a solar eclipse is when the moon comes between us and the sun and casts a shadow of the moon across the Earth's surface.
Okay.
And so that shadow will go from the coast into a significant swath of the United States, but right through central Oregon. And so we have a really great opportunity. The first one in this region since 1979.
Okay. It seems like we get a more optimistic. Maybe I'm thinking of solar eclipses.
We get lunar eclipses.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So okay. Lunar eclipses, you don't have to be in a specific place to see. You just have to be on the nighttime side of the Earth in order to see. And so we'll talk about lunar eclipses and solar eclipses. Okay. So solar eclipses are, they happen less frequently and they're very isolated to a swath of land that gets hit by the shadow of the moon on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a have you ever heard of the word syzygy?
Syzygy. Syzygy. Yes, one of my goals for a long time when I do advertising and marketing writing, I'll sometimes get to name a product or a company or a business name. And so you sit there and you think of as many names as you can or whatever. And it was a goal for a long time to get syzygy as somebody's business name, but nobody could ever say it or pronounce it because it's spelled S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. Right. And it's just a wonderful looking word. And I think there may be a business in San Francisco that is named syzygy because that's what I suggested and I went with it. But I can't remember for sure if I ever got it across, but it is something about two celestial bodies being lined up.
Three.
Three. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So once you have three or more celestial bodies lined up in a row, that's syzygy. And so a solar eclipse requires syzygy, and a lunar eclipse does as well. But we are the middle one in a lunar eclipse, and we are the outside one.
Right.
The moon is in between, in the middle, in a solar eclipse.
Right.
So this is a little map of the United States, and so it's hitting Oregon, going to Idaho, and then beyond Colorado.
I was gonna say, how many can you keep going there? Could you know Colorado, all the states there?
Nebraska, that one.
Of Missouri.
Is that Missouri?
Yeah, there? It's right under Iowa.
Yeah, and then we've got a little
Tennessee
part of Tennessee. Well, the little corner isn't Tennessee. Okay, that's
Wyoming,
South Dakota,
West Virginia.
South Dakota.
Well, it does kind of touch South Dakota.
Yeah, it does up there. And then Georgia, and then
South Carolina, looks like something like that. Anyway, so that was Peek into Geography with the Mark and Todd cast.
So,
it would seem like it would be more across instead of diagonal. You know what I mean?
Well, we are tilted on our axis, uh-huh, and the lunar orbit is also tilted at a 5-degree axis above the axis that we rotate around the sun.
Right.
If everything was in a perfect line, we would have one solar eclipse every month. But because we are at moon is at a tilt away from the solar plane,
right,
that we revolve in, then that only happens every once in a while.
Okay.
So there are phases of a solar eclipse when we have them occur, and I was not aware of this before. Like, they each have names and stuff. So
okay,
it starts, of course, you've got the full sun and the moon. So the sun is over there. We're on the earth, and the moon is coming between the sun and the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it first starts touching the sun, first the edge of the moon touches the sun, that's first contact.
Nice.
So that's called first contact, and you can start to see the little crest start to form against the sun. And of course, never use your bare eyes to look at any part of a solar eclipse, especially when you get the totality of the solar eclipse. You will burn your retinas.
Now, one of the things you always say when they're talking about solar eclipses is, cut a hole in a piece of paper and then look through that. That doesn't make any sense because you're still staring at the sun, but just through a hole
in the paper.
So, I think I have some of the technical difficulty.
Yes.
The technical details of that wrong.
So what they're talking about is making a camera obscura.
Yeah. I was gonna
and
say
so
camera obscura.
You create one card that has a pinprick in it, and another card that you are projecting onto. And so you can use those two cards and you can see the projection of the sun on the bottom card as it goes through the pinhole camera that you're making,
okay,
the camera obscura. So don't pin.
I was just cutting a giant hole in a piece of paper and then holding that up to my eye as I looked at the sun.
So there's inexpensive and up to fairly expensive ways of looking directly at the sun. So they make like the paper 3D glasses that you can get in magazines. They make a viewer for the solar eclipse with that you can buy 10 for $5 or something on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
They also make sunglasses that are certified. That you
blue
can
blockers.
Just, blue, right. There's sun blockers, and you can look directly at the sun with those glasses. So like welding shields,
yeah,
basically.
That's what I've used before as well.
And then they've also got binoculars that are for solar staring, which...
to thin the herd. Just kidding. They're just regular binoculars. You stare deep into the sun's corona
for 2 minutes. And so, yeah, so I'm looking at those, because we were talking about making a little road trip out to,
yes,
the desert to,
Mark and Toddcast on the road.
On the road. So full sun, then first contact, then partial eclipse. Once the sun, the moon shadow base, or the moon is blocking a majority of the sun, you've got a crest, a full crest. That is second contact.
Hmm.
That's partial eclipse. Second contact is, it looks like a diamond ring is how they describe it. And here is the second phase. So here's the first contact, partial eclipse. Second contact is when you just have a flash of light bright on one side, and you start to see the corona of the sun around the entire rest of the thing. And so you've got a full ring with a little diamond on it. So that
it's like
is
a little camera,
second contact.
Second a lens contact. Flare looking thing.
Exactly. And then you have totality. In a total solar eclipse, this happens where all of the area of the sun is blocked out by the moon. And that happens when the lunar orbit is at a close enough position to the Earth to make that happen. If it is on the long swing of the ellipse that it travels on, there will be a ring of fire, basically. You won't block out all of the sun. You won't get eclipse. And that's called an annular eclipse. And so the annular eclipse is when you have the conditions for the total eclipse, with the exception of the moon is too far away to block out all of the sun, and so you get a ring of the sun around the moon.
Okay.
And that's an annular eclipse.
So how common are those? Or is that
just as common? Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what how much of the percentage of the time that the moon is in orbit that it would qualify for an annular eclipse, but they happen.
I'm surprised they don't use the same terminology as the waxing moon and the waning moon and the totality.
Totality. And then third contact is when you start to get the diamond ring on the other side, basically. So you get the flare of the sun, but you still have the full ring of the corona around the moon. And then you go to fourth contact, where the moon slips off of the sun on the other side. That's the fourth contact. Mm-hmm. And that's the
interesting
phases of the sun. Up until modern times, the totality, or the total solar eclipse, was the only time that we could see the corona of the sun, the outer atmosphere of the sun, because it glows, but the brightness that it glows is vastly overrun by the surface of the sun itself. And so by blocking that out, we can see the aurora, and that the corona goes out for several million miles away from the
I wonder when they started predicting when eclipses were happening. I wonder when they were able to do that.
That's a good question.
So go up and look at yourself. Let us know. We're genuinely curious. Why doesn't someone just Google that for us?
Leave that in the...
It was old enough that there was that the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court was able to trick everyone by predicting the eclipse. So
totally.
There's your literary reference for the day.
That gives us information that we weren't able to gather before that. So we can see the shape and the size of the corona only during a solar eclipse. And so the total solar eclipse in 2017 in Oregon will be, if you're in the right spot, right in the middle of the swath of the shadow, you get just more than 2 minutes of viewing time of a total solar eclipse.
Wow. Is that it?
That's it.
2 minutes?
2 minutes.
Wow.
Then it's gone.
things in space move fast.
They do.
Does this ever freak you out?
Yes. Yes.
Like, it's terrifying that if you look at it, it will burn your eyes out. And, like, it will cook you to death if you're not careful because it's just so hot.
Yeah. Somebody.
It's freaky.
Yes.
Like, when it comes out from behind a cloud even, and you can, like, immediately feel that warmth, that is terrifyingly hot.
Yes. That is true. The... is not false.
All your kids can use that in their science fair thing as a quote. For, it is really hot.
So a lunar eclipse, on the other hand, is you don't have to have any eye protection because you are watching the Earth's shadow fall on the moon. And because of that, everybody who is an audience on that side of the Earth that can see the moon in the sky mm-hmm. is part of that.
Right.
And so everybody can see it. It's not dependent on a little swath of Earth. And it will only happen, if we think about the syzygy, it will only happen when there is a full moon. So a lunar eclipse only ever happens on nights of a full moon, because in order for a full moon, that means that the sun is shining on the moon in such a way that we see 100% of the shiningness,
right?
And so it is exactly opposite the sun from us. And so that's when we have a full moon. That's the only time that our shadow can fall upon it. As
weird.
Well, right?
Okay, I'm gonna have to go home and think about that tonight for a while and parse that through my head.
Right,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Whereas a solar eclipse, it's not dependent on any of that.
Right.
And yeah, it's only gonna happen when the moon is between us and the sun, so it'll be opposite of that. Yeah, won't ever happen on a full moon.
Weird.
So, there's a lot of resources online for. So the next lunar eclipse is also in August of this year, and so towards the beginning of August we'll have a lunar eclipse, and towards the third week of August we'll have the solar eclipse. And so August 2017 is eclipse month.
Wow, we're going to be lousy with eclipses. Eclipse eyes.
Throwing them around. We're crazy.
Eclipses?
Eclipse eye?
Ecclesiastes?
Yeah, I think so. I think
Ecclesiastes.
Two Ecclesiastes.
You are fake news.
Two. It's the whole Apollo X.
Sweet.
That's it.
That's cool. Yeah, and we were talking about a little bit earlier about taking the Mark and Todd guest on the road.
Yeah.
And doing a little road trip for that. So that'll be cool. Nice. I think that does it for today. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. You can find out more at markandtoddcast.com, where you can listen to all past 77 episodes.
Wow.
This is episode 78 already. Speaking of, so we're going to be getting to show 100 at some point. And I'm trying to think of something special to do. So I wanted to do maybe a big clip show of some sort. So if you have something that you remember that you enjoyed listening to that we can replay again, I can add it to a whole thing. I'm not looking for the whole main topic that we've done, but maybe just little small things that we did in the news or in the openings that would be fun to hear again. I was telling you, Mark, before we started that I wanted to pull the episode where you talked about the professional cuddler. Which I remember you surprising me with the cuddler story, and that was amazing. So yeah, if you have ideas or want to hear something, you can let me know, and I can put a little show together for our 100th episode. Other than that, you can visit us on Facebook as well at facebook.com/markandtoddcast. And earlier today, we were together with Brian, the Unipiper kid, and we recorded episode 5 of Portland at the Movies, where we take a look at the movies filmed in and around Portland. And this month, we took a look at a 1989 Burt Reynolds movie called Breaking In that you can see on YouTube. And you can listen for that episode coming out a little bit later this week. That's all I have. I thought I was going to play this out with what I wanted to be the the Jamaican remix of Criss Cross's Jump, which I have on maxi single CD, but I have not backed that up on my computer, so that's at home. So instead, I will just play the regular Criss Cross Jump. We will see you guys.
Don't play too much of it or they'll block get, us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so. I'll play that ad first. Cricket ad.
Oh my word.
We don't want to get sued by Chris and or Cross, although I think one of them is dead.
Shh.
I don't think he knows. Totally crossed out. I know still an astonishing amount of the words to this song. Wiggle and shake your rump. How high? A wiggle, 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 whack. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Nice.